Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I am sorry that I have not uploaded in such a long time. My old computer died, and it took me quite a while to get a replacement. I lost all the audio files that I had recorded on my old computer, including a couple of episodes of this podcast. So it set me back quite a bit, but I should be ready to continue now. Also, in my previous episodes, I heavily edited the audio. I'd go through and remove mistakes and re-record and cut out silences and generally tried to put out a very polished product. And I probably won't be doing that so much going forward. It will likely be a single take, and I probably won't go through and cut out every time there's an imperfection because that's just way too much work for me. And I hate doing editing. It's one of my least favorite things. So I hope this new style is well received and okay for you guys. So let's jump into it. There is a no experience needed hiring bid coming up to become an air traffic controller. And as a controller myself, I love to encourage others to apply because this is such a great and unique career. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about some of the most common questions I get asked about the application bid, as well as go point by point through an old hiring bid so you can learn the requirements to apply and know what to expect when the bid is open. And again, I'll be using a previous no experience needed bid information from the Point65.com hiring FAQ page and my own personal experience to deliver this information. So the first question, how do you find the bid? Where is it? Well, the federal government does all of their hiring through a website called usajobs.gov. During the application window between June 24th and June 27th, go to usajobs.gov and enter 2152 into the search box. That's 2152. After hitting enter, go to the filters and select open to the public. It'll have a light blue circle icon next to it. And that's how you'll find the bid. And to verify it's the right one, look at the opening and closing dates. It should be June 24th to June 27th. You will have to create an account on usajobs.gov to submit your application. So that's where you can find it. Now that you know where it's at, let's dig into the requirements to apply. So what are the eligibility requirements for the all source, also known as the off the street bid? And that's basically just the bid that doesn't require any previous experience. Well, U.S. citizenship is required. Selective service registration is required for male applicants. All applicants must pass the Air Traffic Skills Assessment Exam. That's the ATSA exam, and I can talk more about that later. And applicants must qualify based on one or several methods, including experience, work history, education, and I'll do a deep dive on those requirements later in the show. What is the age requirement? Well, without prior experience, the hiring bid must close before your 31st birthday. So if you're 30 years old now and your birthday is July 1st, you could apply under this bid because it closes June 27th, which would be before you turn 31, obviously. With prior military air traffic control or FAA contract tower experience, you must receive your original appointment before your 36th birthday. So you could be hired after 31 under that special consideration. How many people is the FAA hiring? Well, it varies year to year. Last year, the FAA reached out to me on Instagram asking me to help promote the hiring bid, and I was happy to do so. And after the hiring bid was over, I messaged them asking how many people applied and how many would likely get through the next step in the process, and they said they couldn't disclose either of those numbers, so I don't really have an answer for you, unfortunately. Next question, I have not graduated college. Can I apply based on college experience? And I'll cover the qualifications section later, but you don't need to have graduated college or have a college degree to apply. You could qualify if you have a four-year degree, if you have a combination of college credits and full-time employment, or full-time employment alone, along with two other ways to qualify. If you're going for a combination of college and work, your first... I might have to cut this bit out. Basically, it requires a certain percentage of college experience and full-time work experience. So these two, you have to convert it to a percentage, and those two percentages combined must equal or exceed 100%. So for example, if you completed 90 out of 120 credits for a bachelor's degree, that would be 75% of your education percentage, 90 over 120. And then you'd have to look at your full-time work history. So for this example, while attending college, let's say you worked full-time for three summers, each summer being three full months, you would have 9 months work experience. The requirements say you need 36 months, so divide 9 by 36, and you get 25. add your two percentages together and you get 100%, the 75% for education and the 25% for your work experience. Of course, there are other ways to qualify as well, so make sure you check the bid. And again, I'll kind of dig more into that. That was kind of a bad explanation, but I'll dig more into that later in the episode. The next question, I only work part-time. Can I use that to apply based on work experience? In the past, they have allowed part-time, but it had to equal the same amount of full-time work experience. So, for example, if the bid requires 3 years of 40 hours per week, but you only work 20 hours per week, then you must have worked for 6 years total to equal the same amount of time. However, the bids after 2016 make no mention of this concept, and I applied prior to when they stopped doing that, so I personally don't know if they still do that for part-time. The most recent bid did specify full-time employment, but you should still apply and let HR make the decision on whether or not you qualify. Don't rule yourself out. Can I apply with a drug or alcohol background? You can apply. It is up to the regional flight surgeon on whether they sign off on your history or not. Typically, a one-time or a minor occurrence will not be disqualifying. However, you may have to conduct a Tier 2 investigation in your background check, and this will add months to the clearance processing time. A Tier 2 or a full security investigation will just significantly lengthen the process. If there is an abuse or a pattern of abuse, you will likely be disqualified. What do I need to include on my resume while applying? Well, first and foremost, read the job posting to get all the information required. It is highly recommended that you use the USA Jobs resume builder instead of attaching your own resume. In the previous bids, people have been disqualified for failing to put all of the required information on their resume. Using the USA Jobs resume builder will prevent this from happening, as long as you fill in everything completely. One of the requirements is if you apply based on work experience, you need to show that you worked 3 years of a full-time progressive job, 40 hours a week. What is the process for the security background check? Well, you will be given information to log into EQIP, which is an online application you have to fill out to get your security clearance. It will likely take a couple of hours to complete, and you will need all of your previous addresses and contact information for your references, so it'd be good if you could get that information together before you apply. If there are no red flags that they see, they will give you a conditional security clearance. But if not, then you may have to wait for the background investigation to be completed, which could take a while. What is a conditional security clearance? Well, a temporary clearance allows you to begin working before the full security clearance is granted. You're able to attend the academy with a conditional clearance, and while there or at your first facility, you may have to interview with an investigator before getting your full clearance. If something comes up after you start which prohibits you from receiving the clearance, you could potentially be fired. Personally, I conducted my face-to-face interview with my investigator while at my first facility, so it may come later than expected. I think I was already certified on ground and everything when that came, so it took a few months to get it done in my case. What is the process for the medical clearance? In the clearance instruction letter, a CIL, which I'll talk about that later, you'll be given contact information for aerospace medicine who will schedule your medical appointments, your examination, the MMPI, which is just the psychological evaluation, your drug tests, etc. It's normal for it to take several weeks to receive a response. You'll schedule all of the appointments yourself. And after the FAA gets the results, your medical representative will gather everything required, and they might ask you for some more paperwork, and then they'll forward it all to the regional flight surgeon, who will sign off on it or request a Tier 2, which is just an additional check. It can take several months for your medical to clear. Your HR rep will only know when it has changed status, basically if it's been cleared, if it's been denied. That's what they'll know. The MMPI, which again is the psychological evaluation, must be administered at an FAA facility, and it may not necessarily be the nearest facility to where you live. The contact info should be listed in the clearance instruction letter, and after taking the test, it normally takes at least 30 days to process. Scoring and reporting of the MMPI is done by a third party, and then the results are sent to the FAA. For prior military, if you used to be in the military, it's very important that you have sealed copies, if possible, of your military medical records. Once leaving the military, the Department of Veterans Affairs becomes the custodian of your records, and it can be very difficult to get them sent to the FAA in a timely manner. The flight surgeon will not grant your clearance until after reviewing your military records. Also, the FAA pays for all the medical appointments, so you should not be paying anything out of pocket. How long does the hiring process take? After applying, off-the-street bids typically take from 1 to 2 years. The FAA requires that you be able to start within 15 months of the bid closing, but that is no guarantee that you will actually start within that time frame. Prior experience bids typically have been hired from 6 to 12 months. Personally, it took me almost exactly 2 years from when I initially applied to when my class started in Oklahoma City. So those are some of the most common questions asked on the website Point 65, which is basically a controller's forum, as well as some of the most common questions that I get asked. And now that we've covered the basics, let's get into some of the more specific details involving the application process, the actual application, and what to expect while waiting to hear back from the FAA after you applied. So reading straight from one of the prior no experience bids, let's start with duties. This is a developmental air traffic control specialist position responsible for the safe, orderly, and expeditious movement of air traffic through the nation's airspace. Developmental controllers receive a wide range of training in controlling and separating live air traffic within designated airspace at and around an airport traffic control tower or radar approach control facility or air route traffic control center. As a new air traffic control specialist, you will spend your first several weeks of employment in an intensive training program at the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City. While attending Academy training, you will be on temporary appointment. And this is important to note, you do not actually get the permanent job until after passing the Academy. Until you pass the Academy, you cannot join the union, you will not receive as much pay as you will as a certified controller, and you generally operate under a different category than regular controllers. Academy students receive basic air traffic control training at the FAA Academy, which includes complete occupational indoctrination, including highlights of federal employment, familiarization with organizational structure and functions, aircraft, air traffic control system, and aviation industry, classroom instruction, and workshop exercises related to the air traffic control system. Individuals who do not successfully complete training at the FAA Academy and all other necessary requirements will have their employment terminated. So if you don't pass, your temporary appointment is ceased. Prior failure of an FAA Academy training or previous denial of permanent facility placement, if you deny your permanent facility placement after passing the Academy, may constitute a basis for non-selection. So they may not pick you up on this bid if you had gone to the Academy before and failed, or if you'd gone to the Academy before and passed but turned down a certain location. Upon successful completion of the Academy, initial training program, and other employment requirements, newly hired controllers will be offered a permanent appointment at an FAA facility with a basic salary of $40,694 plus applicable locality pay based on facility assignment. So the $40,000 number here was from last year. That number has gone up since then. Also, it clearly says that this does not include the locality pay. And no matter where you go, you're going to receive a minimum of 16.2% locality on top of your base pay. So with current numbers, the minimum you'll make from day one as a trainee at your facility will be $48,810. This number will be greater if you're at a location with a higher locality pay or a location that pays CIP, which is controller incentive pay, some extra money that certain facilities get. And this number will go up as you complete training and get certified on additional positions. So, that's almost $50,000, you know, from my point of view, that's not bad to start with, especially. And then it'll take you, it really depends. Some facilities you can check out really quick with under a year, you know, within 6 months even. Other facilities, it usually takes 2 to 3 years to certify. But either way, once you get fully certified, you're going to be making much more money. Applicants with prior ATC experience will have their salary set in accordance with the air traffic controller collective bargaining agreement upon conversion. Controller trainees will be paid long-term expense rate, aka a per diem, for Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to help offset daily cost of living while attending the FAA Academy. The FAA will pay for cost of travel in accordance with applicable agency policies. So if you fly into Oklahoma City, the FAA will cover the cost of your flight, and if you drive, the FAA will pay you the federal standard per mile and will cover gas costs as long as you save receipts. This was true when I went to the Academy. I don't think they've changed the policy, but don't quote me on it. I'm not 100% sure. This next bit talks about what I just mentioned a moment ago. As an air traffic control specialist, you will receive pay increases as you successfully complete the progressive phases of controller training at your assigned facility. The FAA has air traffic control facilities in every state, as well as Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam. This announcement is open to those applicants willing to work at any FAA air traffic control facility. Applicant geographic area preferences are for informational purposes only and will not be used in the selection process. However, preferences may be considered at time of placement. Facility placements will be finalized the day following successful completion of academy training. Declining to select a facility from the list of available facilities will result in termination of employment as placement will be based upon the needs of the FAA. So if you end up going to a facility you don't want to go to, you can transfer out later. I'm from Ohio, and my career started out on the West Coast. After certifying, I was able to transfer out of the West within a year. I would not recommend turning down the position just because you don't like the facility you choose or are assigned. You can always transfer out later. But if you say no, it will be very difficult to have another chance in the future because, like I said before, there's a stipulation that if you've gone to the academy before and turned down your placement, they may not hire you again. Prior experience or training in air traffic control is not required. If a candidate applies for and is selected under this temporary trainee announcement, all of the employment conditions associated with this position will apply. So some requirements, the conditions of employment, like I said, U.S. citizenship is required. Selective service registration is required for men. You have to submit to random drug testing. All applicants have to pass the air traffic skills assessment, the ATSA exam, and I'll pass over some of that because I'm going to talk about that later. All right, so qualifications. Here's the big one. You need to qualify in one of these five ways. They give you five ways that you're even eligible to apply. So here they are. The first method is to qualify based on progressively responsible work experience. Applicants must document 3 years of full-time, that's 40 hours a week, progressively responsible experience. Most types of paid or unpaid employment will provide progressively responsible experience as the individual doing the work learns about the organization, gains knowledge about the work, and demonstrates responsibility. That's it. That's all the information they give, which means this is super broad and could work for you. If you worked at Taco Bell for 40 hours a week for 3 years and you never got demoted, that could count, as long as you learned more about cooking ground beef, gained knowledge about the correct temperature to store sour cream at, and demonstrated the responsibility to clean the grill regularly, you qualify under this. This is the way most off-the-street candidates will qualify for the position. And if you think I'm exaggerating about the Taco Bell example, I'm really not. When I applied, I included that I was a resident assistant in college. 1 year, I had 40 residents I was responsible for. The next year, I had 42. And that was completely out of my control. They were just assigned to me. But the FAA considers that progressively responsible because I was given more responsibility. Like they explicitly said, you will basically be given progressively responsible work at any job the longer you're there. So it is super easy to qualify under this method. Think about it. Like when you're first hired, obviously you get trained and learn everything. If a year or two after you get hired, you have to train the new person, that's increased responsibility. You have to train the new people. It's so broad and it's so easy to qualify under this method if you just worked full-time for 3 years. The second way that you can qualify is based upon education. Applicants must document a full 4-year course of study leading to a bachelor's degree. Schools must be accredited by an accrediting institution recognized by the U.S. Department of Education. If qualifying based on education, applicants must submit a copy of the transcript, which includes the name of the institution, quarter or semester hours earned, and or confer date. CTI, to be eligible for Pool 1, the transcript must reflect the confer date, and you must also provide appropriate CTI recommendation. If you don't know what CTI is, if you don't know what that means, just don't worry about it. You aren't CTI. If you've never heard those letters before, if you don't know what that is, then you were not a CTI student. So don't worry about that. But that's all they say for this method. That's everything it includes. So if you have a 4-year degree in art history from an online university, as long as that university is accredited by an institution the DOE recognizes, then you qualify for the job. It doesn't specify any specific degree of study, just a 4-year bachelor degree from a legit accredited school. That's it. Such a broad area. The third method that you could qualify under is a combination of both work experience and education. The applicant's total qualifying experience is converted to a percentage of the experience required, and then the applicant's education is converted to a percentage of the education required. The combined percentages must equal 100%. So this is what I was talking about earlier when I stumbled all over my words. I gave a really bad example earlier.
at the undergraduate level, successfully completed education that has not led to possession of a degree is credited based on its relationship to 120 semester hours or 180 quarter hours. For example, 30 semester hours or 45 quarter hours is comparable to 1 year of undergraduate education. For study at a business or technical school, 36 weeks of study, 20 plus classroom hours per week, is comparable to one academic year above high school. Now, this is a really interesting way that you could qualify because it combines work and education, which could work for people who have dropped out of college. So let's say you completed 2 years of college before dropping out. That means you've reached 50% of the education requirement. Now, if you took a job after that and had 2 years of full-time progressively responsible work experience, you've reached 66% of the work requirement, 2 years out of the 3 years, 66%, meaning that you would qualify under this method because 50% plus 66% is greater than 100%. This way could work for a lot of people who tried to go to college, started to go to college, and for whatever reason, there are tons of reasons, did not complete their degree. This is a great method for those people. Now, the fourth out of the five methods to qualify is based on specialized work experience as an air traffic control specialist. Applicants qualifying based on specialized experience must provide supporting documentation that verifies this requirement has been met. So if you haven't been an air traffic controller in the past, this method would not work for you. But if you have been a controller in the past, then you could qualify under this. And the fifth and final method is to qualify based on alternative requirements. Applicants must provide supporting documentation that verifies at least one of the following alternative requirements being met. A. Do you hold or have held an appropriate facility rating and have actively controlled air traffic in civilian or military air traffic control terminals or centers? B. Do you hold or have you held an FAA certificate as a dispatcher for an air carrier? C. Do you hold or have held an instrument flight rating? D. Do you hold or have held an FAA certificate as a navigator, or have you been fully qualified as a navigator in the armed forces? E. Do you have 350 hours of flight time as a co-pilot or higher, and hold or have held a private certificate or equivalent armed forces rating? F. Have you served as a rated aerospace defense command intercept director? So this method, the fifth method, is really good for people who do have some aviation experience. So, like the E method, if you have a private pilot's license and you've been either the pilot in command or a co-pilot and have 350 hours of flight time, you qualify under that. If you have a dispatch license and you've worked for, you know, Southwest or JetBlue or whatever, you could qualify under that. So that's an interesting one if you do have some aviation experience. So those are the five ways that you can qualify. Now, after you learn that you're qualified, if you are qualified, when you go to apply, you're going to see that there are two pools under which you can apply. And the all source bid is separated into these two pools. Pool one is CTI graduates and military veterans. Pool two are all other U.S. citizens. So for pool one, CTI grads and military veterans, a graduate from an institution participating in the Collegiate Training Initiative CTI program who has received from the institution an appropriate recommendation. A veteran eligible for a veteran's recruitment appointment, VRA, pursuant to section 4214 of Title 38, I don't know what that is, and can provide a certificate of release or discharge from active duty within 120 days from the announcement closing. An eligible veteran maintaining aviation experience obtained in the course of your military experience and or entitled to veteran's preference must meet eligibility requirements in section 2108 of Title 5 United States Code. So, if you did not go to a CTI school, if you don't know what a CTI school is, don't worry about it. If you went CTI, you know what CTI is. You should know the requirements. You need to get the recommendation from your college and everything. So that's that. That's kind of its own thing. Pool two is all other U.S. citizens. And that's what I applied under. That's what probably most of you would apply under. Even though I went to a CTI school, in my circumstance, I applied under pool two. So those who qualify for Pool 1 may elect to apply under Pool 2. So if you did go to a CTI school or you were a military veteran meeting those requirements, you could opt to apply under Pool 2. There used to be a requirement to keep the ratio of applicants hired from each pool within 10% of each other, but that was removed in the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2020. So that was a lot of words to say. You will likely apply under Pool 2. If you did not go to a CTI school and you're not a veteran, Pool 2 is what you're going to apply under. I made that much longer than it had to be. Sorry about that. All right. Entrance on duty requirements. If you do not complete all of the pre-employment requirements within 60 days from the date of the clearance instruction letter, you will be removed from the hiring process for this vacancy. And the clearance instruction letter, basically, after you apply and you do all the paperwork and everything and you apply, if the FAA likes you, they'll send you a clearance instruction letter. That'll come after you apply. So if you don't include, if you don't complete all of the pre-employment requirements within 60 days of receiving that clearance instruction letter, you'll be removed from the hiring process. So you have about 2 months to get that done. Age requirements, a maximum age of 30 years is established for initial entry into air traffic control positions covered by Public Law 92-297. Persons who have reached their 31st birthday may not be originally appointed to these positions. If experience was gained as a civilian air traffic control specialist with the Federal Aviation Administration or Department of Defense, you must have been hired prior to age 31. Please see the required documents section of this announcement for further information on specific documentation that must be provided if you were previously hired by the FAA or DOD prior to the maximum entry age for this position. So if you were previously a controller in the FAA or DOD prior to this bid, you could still be hired if you're over the age of 31 as long as you're under 36. When the bid comes out, I would highly recommend checking the bid for more information or reaching out to FAA's HR to learn more, because I did not go down that route. I applied when I was under 31, so I don't know all the details there. All right, education. Applicants who are using education as a qualifier must submit a copy of the official transcripts to substantiate all credit hours and or confer date. Applicants qualifying based on collegiate training initiative, CTI education, must submit a copy of the transcripts to substantiate all credit hours and or confer date, and an appropriate recommendation letter or endorsement certifying the individual would have met the CTI requirements in effect as of December 31st, 2013, for an appropriate recommendation. If you went to a CTI school, you should know all of this, so I'm just going to breeze over it. For more information regarding applying as a CTI applicant, make sure to read the info in the bid. A preview job questionnaire. Make sure your resume includes detailed information to support your qualifications and answers to the job questionnaire. This should be obvious. Answer all the questions and include detailed info. Don't leave anything out, even if you think it makes you look bad. The federal government is going to do a thorough background check on you and all the information you include, and they'll discover if you lied about anything, so don't do it. Additional information. The FAA may use this vacancy to fill other similar vacant positions. This position may be subject to a background investigation. They say may, but it 100% is, because you'll have to obtain a security clearance. A 1 year probationary period may be required. Again, they say may, but there will definitely be 1 year of probation for you. The person selected for this position may be required to file a financial disclosure statement within 30 days of entry on duty. You very likely will have to submit this. Again, don't lie about anything. FAA policy limits certain outside employment and financial investments in aviation-related companies. That's very true. As controllers, we aren't allowed to like buy and sell airline stock or different aviation-related companies. If they're a part, I forget exactly, but I believe if they're part of like a mutual fund or an ETF or something, then it's allowed. But there are certain restrictions on that I don't have the information in front of me right now to cover. This position is covered by the Department of Transportation's Drug and Alcohol Testing Program. Any applicant tentatively selected for this position will be subject to pre-employment or pre-appointment drug screening. Persons occupying a, quote, testing designated position will be subject to random drug and or alcohol testing. This one seems pretty straightforward. Don't do drugs. Don't ingest anything illegal. Don't show up to work drunk. Seems like very fundamental things for a job with a high responsibility like this. All applicants found qualified for the position will be required to complete the Air Traffic Skills Assessment, aka the ATSA. I can do an episode about the ATSA and what to expect. I've already made a TikTok about it, but I won't get into that right now. Travel to and from testing locations will be at the expense of the applicant, aka you'll have to pay for gas or get an Uber there and back. Most recent ATSA results will be utilized for referral regardless if they are higher or lower than the previous score. So if you've applied before, the previous ATSA score won't count, only the most recent one, even if it's higher or lower than the previous one. Applicants may check their USA Jobs account to get updates on the status of their application after the announcement closes. Applicants who set up their USA Jobs account to provide email updates will receive an email notification with any change in status of their applications. I would recommend receiving the email notifications because it's very easy to forget to go and check on the status of your application. But if they send you the email, you're much more likely to see it and remember to look at it. Candidates referred and tentatively selected for air traffic control specialist positions will be randomly assigned to either the en route or terminal track. So there are two sides of air traffic control. There's terminal and en route. They're very different, but they work together. En route has a slightly lower pass rate at the academy than terminal, but you'll likely make more money sooner as an en route controller, aka a center controller, than a terminal controller will. But as you progress in your career, and if you're a terminal controller, you can choose to transfer and go to a higher level facility, you can make more money. So they're just two very different sides of ATC. Prior air traffic control specialist experience will not be factored when determining track assignments. So if you were previously a controller or you were a controller in the military and you were, you know, a terminal controller, they may give you the en route option. They're not going to take that into consideration. Requirements for pre-employment medical clearance. Applicants selected for air traffic control specialist positions must pass a medical examination that includes psychological screening prior to appointment. The psychological screening, again, is also known as the MMPI test. Applicants with prior military experience or military service are encouraged to obtain a sealed copy of their military medical records prior to discharge and to retain these records to be provided upon request if selected. Requirement for security clearance. This position requires an Access National Agency Check and Inquiry with Credit, also known as an ANASI, or higher clearance prior to appointment unless a waiver is obtained. So that's a bunch of fancy words, so you need to be able to achieve a security clearance. Remember, they're going to do a background check on you for your security clearance, so don't lie about anything. I'll say that over and over. Don't do it. You're getting investigated by the federal government. They're going to be thorough. Remember, air traffic controllers have a very important job. We control military aircraft. We control Air Force One. You'll have a lot of responsibility. They're going to vet you very thoroughly, so don't lie about anything. Don't try to cover anything up. They're going to find out about it. Training requirements. After successful completion of academy training, the air traffic control specialist will enter the appropriate phase of field training as determined by the assigned facility to prepare for advancement to the certified professional controller, CPC, level. They must learn the skills needed for operation at higher levels of responsibility. Successful completion at assigned FAA facility is required. Failure to certify will result in separation, demotion, or reassignment. So if you don't certify at your facility, if you don't become a CPC, a certified professional controller, that's the ultimate goal, to become a CPC. If you don't do that at your facility that you're assigned, there's a chance that they'll put you in a different facility and give you another chance, or they could terminate your employment completely. Requirement for non-standard duty hours or work week. I totally messed that up. You may be required to work irregular duty hours or a non-standard work week or tour of duty. You'll likely have to do this. A lot of facilities are 24/7, including all the centers. You're going to work nights, weekends, holidays, birthdays, graveyard shifts, early mornings, anything and everything, because air travel is 24/7. This is not a bargaining unit position. So again, remember, I'm reading a bid for this job that is a temporary appointment. You will get your permanent appointment after the academy. So this is just a temporary appointment. So this job, this bid that you're applying to, is non-union. It's not a bargaining unit position. After you successfully pass the academy, you will have the option to join NACA, which is the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, aka the Controllers Union. You do not have to join it, but you will have the option to do it after passing the academy and going to your first facility. You will be evaluated for this job based on how well you meet the qualifications above. Duh. Important. Applicants may be rated on the extent and quality of service, education, and training relevant to the duties of the position. All answers provided in the online process must be substantiated. Ensure your application package and resume supports your responses. So basically, be thorough, answer all the questions, fill out all the information they request, and once again, do not lie on your application. Required documents. Applicants qualifying based on education, including Collegiate Training Initiative, CTI persons, must submit a copy of the transcripts to substantiate all credit hours and confer date. I said that earlier. Applicants who have previous 2152 experience, that's just air traffic control experience, and are past the maximum entry age of 31, must provide a copy of Notification of Personnel Action, that's the SF-50, you know what that is if you used to be a controller, that verifies original appointment to the civilian 2152 occupational series prior to reaching the maximum entry age of 31. This would be the initial Notification of Personnel Action, SF-50, new hire action into the 2152 series, received from your servicing Federal Human Resources Office. So that whole last bit there, if you weren't a controller previously, don't worry about it. If you were a controller previously, you need to include an SF-50. And you know what that is. Okay. So some forms here. If you're relying on education to meet the qualification requirements, I'm going to skip over this because I said it before. Basically, you had to have gone to an accredited institution recognized by the DOE, and you have to include your transcripts. Failure to provide all of the required information as stated in the vacancy announcement may result in an ineligible rating or may affect the overall rating. How to apply. Applications will be accepted online until 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on the close date of the bid. For the most recent upcoming bid, as of the time of uploading this podcast, the end date is June 27th, 2022. If you're listening to this podcast after June 2022 to learn about the application process, make sure you know what the opening and closing date is for the bid you're applying to. Obviously, I don't know when the next one is going to be. So double check on that because, you know, I'm stuck here in June 2022. I can't tell the future. You must apply online to receive consideration. Your application must have a status of received by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on the close date for it to be accepted. Pretty obvious. Apply within the window. In describing your work experience and or education, please be clear and specific regarding your education or experience. The FAA strongly encourages applicants to utilize the USAA Jobs Resume Builder in the creation of resumes. And if any employer... not even the FAA, but if any employer strongly encourages anything when applying, you better do it if you want a shot, okay? That's a huge tip right there. Just use the USA Jobs Resume Builder. Make sure to include each piece of work history, including job title, include the series and grade if it was a federal job, your duties, and be specific in describing your duties, include your employer's name and address, your supervisor's name and phone number, start and end dates at that job, including month, day, and year, for example, June 18th, 2017 to April 5th, 2008. Specify whether it was full-time or part-time status and include the hours worked per week. So if it was part-time but only 10 hours, specify 10. If it was part-time but 28 hours, include 28. And also include your salary. The next section, determining length of general or specialized experience is dependent on the above information, and failure to provide all of this information may result in a finding of ineligible. Again, be thorough, include everything. You may upload completed documents to your USA Jobs account. This will provide you the opportunity to utilize the uploaded information again when applying for future vacancies. I highly suggest that as well. You create a USA Jobs account anyways to apply to this. Go ahead and upload your documents there so you just have them for any future applications, and then you can just update them as needed. If you don't get picked up on this bid, you can just edit them and turn them in on the next one, or if there's a different federal job that you happen to see, you have, you know, your information uploaded right there for easy access. So that is more or less it. That's kind of an overview of what to expect in the application process, the qualification requirements, and my suggestions for how to navigate the whole thing. I didn't go into detail on some things because the FAA will give you the information you need to know as you progress in the process, but I hope you feel a little bit more comfortable applying now that you know what to expect. I said it earlier, but I'll say it again. Don't get discouraged if it takes a long time for you to go through the process. Again, for me, it took 2 years from when I applied to when I actually started at the academy. I know some people who have gotten through the process much quicker than that, and I know some people who have taken longer than that. So don't get discouraged. As long as your application is still in and it's still open, you still have a chance. With that said, I would not recommend quitting your current job until you have a firm offer letter and a class date for Oklahoma in hand. And a firm offer letter is different than the CIL I mentioned earlier. Don't quit your job until you have a class date for Oklahoma in hand. And that is very important. So again, to cover some of the main things, be thorough in your application and include everything that they ask for. Don't lie. Don't try to cover anything up. That's just silly. They'll discover it and you'll likely be disqualified if you lie to the federal government. They make this pretty easy to apply to as far as the qualifications. Again, it can be education, work experience, a combination of the two, or the other, if you were previously a controller, or the additional things, like if you were a dispatcher or whatever. So there are a few different ways that you can qualify to apply. The other requirements, of course, make sure that you apply prior to your 31st birthday. If you're a man, make sure that you're signed up with Selective Service. Pretty basic stuff. It's not a super high bar for entry. That bar will be raised as you go through the application process. You'll have to pass your background. You'll have to pass your psychological eval. You're going to have to pass your medical clearance. You're going to have to pass the academy. You're going to have to certify at your first facility. The bar gets raised with each step in the process. It will get more difficult. But to initially apply, it's very broad and the bar is pretty low to get as many applicants as possible. And then once they get all those applicants, they'll fish through them to get the cream of the crop later on. So that's it for this episode. If you have any questions, I would recommend FAA's HR as your first point of contact. But I could also answer some questions if you DM me on my Instagram page at DoAviation, at DoAviation. And don't forget to follow me on TikTok, also at DoAviation. If this episode was helpful to you, please subscribe to the show and give the podcast a 5-star rating. And if you know someone who may be interested in becoming an air traffic controller, please share this podcast with them. Until next time, wishing you clear skies and tailwinds. Take care. The views and opinions expressed on the Do Aviation podcast for entertainment purposes only and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Department of Transportation, the Federal Aviation Administration, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, or any other entity outside of the individuals on the show. Unless otherwise stated, the Do Aviation podcast is in no way associated with or done in collaboration with the DOT, FAA, or NACA. This program is not official guidance and does not replace the teachings of a certified trainer or instructor. Any and all episodes are the property of the uploader and shall not be recorded or transcribed without express written permission. This program was recorded on personal time with personal property and no government resources are used in the show. Any recordings used are from third-party sources. The intent of the Do Aviation podcast is to advocate for aviation safety, discuss aviation, and promote aviation as a whole, but makes no guarantees to the accuracy of anything said on the show or any legal obligations. Federal aviation regulations should be followed at all times, and listeners are encouraged to use good judgment and practice safety in all situations. Your local flight standards district office or certified flight instructor should be referred to for any questions regarding aviation laws, rules, or regulations.